I lived in Orlando for about 12 years before I moved back here. And when I was 18, I moved there. And for the first couple of years, we started creating this little friend group in our early 20s. And we had all these friends. And one of my friends, he was the first one to get married out of the friend group. And they really, really, really wanted kids. And they really wanted them. And then little by little, all the different people in our friend group started getting married. And then one by one, all of us started having kids, except for this one couple. The couple that first got married, they weren't able to have kids. And they were the ones who wanted the kids the most. And so then we kept moving on in life, and they weren't able to have kids. And we were moving on to our second and some people third kids. And they started to get in that place where they were just kind of frustrated with God. Is there, any of you guys ever been there? You're just kind of frustrated with God, and you're like, God, I don't really understand this. We wanted kids. Some of the people that didn't want kids are having kids, and we're watching this happen. It doesn't really seem fair. And so years go by, and my buddy was like, you know what, honey, let's just adopt. Let's adopt a child. It's going to be our child. It's going to be the same thing. And she's like, no, I want to have a kid. I don't want to adopt. And she went through this tug of war with God and this whole thing. And fast forward, they end up coming to a place where like, okay, we're going to adopt. And so they adopt this amazing little boy who was in a terrible situation, and now he's living with this family who is God-loving, fearing family who's going to raise him in not just a terrible life that he would have grown up in. And God kind of changed this little kid's life around because these people adopted this little boy. It was an amazing thing. And 3 months later after they adopt this little boy, she gets pregnant. I mean, isn't that crazy, right? And I was talking to her, and I'm like, wow, what a crazy thought. And she said, you know what, John? God really had me on this journey. I mean, I was mad at God. But you know what he showed me? He showed me that if I would just trust him, that he had a story for this little boy that we adopted. He had a plan for this little boy. And if I would have had kids when all of you guys were having kids, guess what? I never, ever would have adopted that little boy. We wouldn't have adopted if we were able to do what we were able to do. And probably, I mean, some of you guys have heard a story like this. Maybe you've gone through something. It doesn't always end up where you have kids. That doesn't always happen. But isn't it interesting? Sometimes you'll be in a situation where you think it's a negative and God somehow turns it around to be a positive. And you hear people say this all the time when they walk through stuff like this, that I wouldn't sign up for that, right? That I wouldn't wish that season on anyone. But I'm not sure if God could have done what he did in my life unless I walked through that. That I wouldn't be the person that I am today if I didn't walk through that challenging season. That's a pivotal circumstance, and that's what we're going to be talking about, pivotal circumstances in our lives. That I thought God was far away, but he was really right next to me the entire time. And suddenly, after you walk through something like this, suddenly Bible stories, right? You read the Bible and they're not just stories anymore. They're personal. It's like, wow, I kind of went through something like that. And when you pray, you don't just talk to God as like this being far away. I mean, he becomes your father, doesn't he? And all of a sudden, things change. They become personal. And really, these pivotal circumstances, these experiences, they can really be positive or negative. They can be positive. You can go on a missions trip. And we have people on a missions trip right now. They're going to come back. Maybe it was their first missions trip. And they're going to go, wow, God completely changed my life. I just saw the world differently. I walked through something differently. And man, it's a pivotal circumstance in my life. I'm going to do things differently because of what I saw. Or maybe it was the birth of your first child. I mean, you have the birth of your first child, and you're like, whoa. Like, God, how did that happen? Any of you guys remember that? You think back, and you're like, a baby was inside a human. Like, a human was inside a human. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, God, you're amazing, right? It just kind of blows your mind. But most of the time, I think these pivotal circumstances, it's these negative circumstances that kind of come out of nowhere, right? It's that phone call that you weren't expecting. It's that information that all of a sudden you are given. It's that decision that someone made. And your relationship with God all of a sudden had to go from down here where you kind of trust him and it's not a big deal to it's way up here. And you're walking through something and you're going, man, I've got to trust God. I think most of the time it's these big, unexpected circumstances that grow our faith the most. And here's the important part, if we allow it, right? If we allow it. C.S. Lewis, one of the great theologians of our time, he's in the book, The Problem of Pain, he says this: God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pain, that it's his megaphone to arouse a deaf world. And that's kind of hard to hear, right? That God wants to get our attention through pain. And maybe you're a skeptic here. Maybe you're new to church, or maybe you're new to the faith, or whatever. But maybe you're kind of like, man, this is just the Christian way to help God out of the corner that he's backed himself into, right? If he's a loving God, and bad things aren't supposed to happen to good people, right? And so this is just kind of the Christian way to explain away pain and hurt and suffering. But here's the truth, that there's a relationship between bad, unexpected circumstances and our faith. There's a relationship that happens between bad, unexpected circumstances and our faith, and it's not an accidental relationship. It's not an accidental relationship. We're going to talk about that God has leveraged it from the very beginning. He's leveraged these bad, unexpected circumstances to help grow our faith from the very beginning. James, who's the brother of Jesus, and he's right in the middle of this whole thing as Jesus dies on the cross and rises from the grave, right? He's right in the middle of it. He writes in James chapter 1. This isn't going to be our main scripture, but he kind of points it out. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. That there's this connection between trials, the things that we walk through, the hard stuff and the storms that we face, and our faith. That it actually helps grow our faith. It produces persevering faith in us. And he goes on to say, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. That this relationship between trials and faith, that it's not accidental that people walk through these. That it's not an accident. In fact, it's one of the five things that we believe that grows our faith. It's one of the five things that grows our faith. I'll tell you this, it's not the one we sign up for, though, is it? It's not the one where we're like, yeah, I'll take that. But it's true, and here's what's true, that the very things, the very circumstances that have the power to turn us away from God, God almost always leverages them to turn us to himself. And there it is, if we allow him. If we allow him, the very circumstances that have the power to turn us away from God, the pain and the suffering and the hurts and the hard times and the storms, the things that could push us away from God, he can leverage to turn us to himself if we allow him. And this is just how God works. This is what he does. And I think the best illustration of this comes from a story in the life of Jesus. Now, it's almost all of you guys know it or know of it or have heard about it. And so if you've heard this story before, I want to challenge you to kind of view it with a fresh lens. I don't want you to skip to the end right away. I want you to walk with us through this story as we experience it and almost kind of look at it and say, I want to experience this story for the very first time. Because I think for some of you, this story is going to create a new category for you. I think it's going to create a new category because in this story, Jesus doesn't use a negative circumstance to create faith. He creates a negative circumstance to grow their faith. He doesn't use a negative circumstance in this story. He creates a negative circumstance. So let's jump into the story and discover why God uses pivotal circumstances to do something in us, but not necessarily to us. We're going to jump right in. It's John chapter 11. Verse 1. It says, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And you have to understand that these three people, these three characters in this story right here, Lazarus, Mary, Martha, I mean, these were very, very close. They were very, very close to Jesus. They were followers of Jesus. They would have supported him financially. I mean, these were some of his closest friends were these three right here. And it says, so the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. The one you love is sick. Now, Jesus is about 3 to 4 days away by foot. If you were to walk, it would be about 3 to 4 days away. And this is pretty dramatic because the sisters would have sent a messenger, and they send this messenger to Jesus, and the messenger said, Lord, the one you love is sick. He doesn't even say Lazarus. He says, Lord, the one you love is sick. And I want you to think about that. Out of all the people Jesus has healed, been around, all the followers that he's been a part of, all the messenger had to say was, the one you love is sick. And Jesus knew exactly who they were talking about. I mean, these people were close to Jesus. These were his friends, and his friends were calling Jesus for help. In verse 4, it says, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory. It's for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Jesus, right here, he kind of creates a new category for us. He kind of stops and creates a new category that Jesus says that sickness or disease can be for God's glory. And you're like, wait. God's glory? Yeah, for God's glory. That this will not end in death, but it's going to be for God's glory. And I don't know about you, but I like different kinds of glory. I like different kinds of glory. I don't really like the sickness, disease type of glory so much. How many of you guys just watched the Super Bowl this year? Did anybody watch it? How many of you guys just loved the Super Bowl this year? It was just, I'm a big Eagles fan. So if you didn't know that, I mean, I was just in heaven. I mean, I just absolutely loved it. And the Eagles, the whole year, I'm just going to take some time here to talk about my favorite team. The Eagles just absolutely just crushed it this year. I don't know if any of you guys are NFL fans or were paying attention, but the Eagles were pretty dominant the entire year. Yeah, that's, thank you. I don't know who that was. Thank you. And they go into the season, and out of nowhere, Carson Wentz, who's probably the MVP of the league, honestly, let's be real, so he tears his ACL. At week 13, you're like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? And all of Eagles fans just went, right? And we're down. And then Nick Foles, Saint Nick is what they call him, Saint Nick. And Saint Nick comes in, and he starts throwing these dimes. I mean, they beat the Falcons. They just destroyed the Vikings. I mean, was that even a game? And then they go into the Patriots, and they just bear with me. This is fantastic. And they go into the Patriots. And they're the underdogs. He's the second string player. And I mean, Nick Foles, he's dropping dimes over Patriots receivers, these vaunted, hated Patriots, right? And he's just, everything is just perfect. And all of a sudden, they do this play. It's called the Philly Special. I don't know if you guys saw it, but they completely tricked Belichick. I mean, he had no idea what was happening. And they go up, and the quarterback goes out for a pass. Now, the quarterback, if you don't know football, he is the one who throws the ball, okay? So he usually throws the ball. And I'm taking a long time to talk about this, mostly because it's the only chance I'll get to tell you about the Eagles, okay? So he goes out for the pass, the tight end throws it to him, and he catches this touchdown. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest moment of Philly history. And he runs over to the sideline, and the running back comes over to him and grabs the quarterback's face mask, and he's like, catch him and throw him today, baby, you're on fire. You're the best quarterback ever. And you know what Nick Foles, they showed the behind-the-scenes footage, you know what he says? To God be the glory. It's not about me. And I mean, yes, the Eagles are the best team in the world. Let's just, thank you. That's fantastic. But honestly, and this guy is, that's the kind of glory I like, right? The kind of glory like, no, not me. It's all God, right? It's God. Or maybe you get that promotion or you get that award at work, right? And you're like, wow, you did so good. Congratulations. Man, God is so good to me. To God be the glory, right? It's that kind of glory. Not me. It's all God. But Jesus says, that's good. That's great. But there's another program for my glory. There's another program. And something very negative is maybe introduced into your life, right? And I'm going to allow it, and I'm going to leverage it for my glory. That's hard to take, isn't it? But in verse 5, he says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus. And just to stop, there is a deep friendship and relationship here. I mean, these are his close friends. So when he heard, verse 6, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Whoa, wait. You hear that the person that you love, the one that you love, Lazarus and Mary and Martha, you hear that Lazarus is sick, and it says that you stay where you were 2 more days? It's like, wait, he did the exact opposite of what all of us reading the story would expect him to do, right? We would expect him to get up and rush over and do what he needed to do for Lazarus. Jesus gets word that someone he loves is sick, and he's like, hey guys, disciples, look at me. Everybody sit back down, okay? Just sit back down. We're not going anywhere. And for 2 days, he did nothing. nothing. And you've felt that way, haven't you? You've gone through a season in your life or a storm or a situation in your life where you're like, God, hello. And it's like nothing. And you're like, God, my kids will become missionaries if I just get something from you, right? Just anything. Give me something. And you don't hear anything. In verse 7, all of a sudden, he waits for 2 days. And verse 7 says, and then. It's like 2 days of nothing, Jesus, right? 2 days of making Mary and Martha sweat it out, right? 2 days of making them wait, and they get word from a messenger, and he's like, hey, did you tell Jesus? Yeah, I told Jesus. What did he do? Nothing. What do you mean? Is he coming? I don't know. I don't know if he's coming. Has anyone seen Jesus? And slowly they have to watch their brother die? For 2 days you do nothing? Jesus, I don't understand. 2 days you do nothing, and then? And then it says, verse 7, and then he said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. Let us go back to Judea. Now, Judea was close to Bethany, and Bethany was where Lazarus was. And Judea was not really a good place for Jesus. It wasn't a safe place for Jesus. Let's read about it. Verse 8, it says, the disciples say, but Rabbi, they said, a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back? Like, Jesus, I don't know if you understand. They're trying to remind him, right? Like, do you remember the rocks? Do you remember those? They came flying. And just so you know, Jesus, everywhere you go, we go. And we don't like getting stoned either, okay? So can we not do that? Do you remember that time, Jesus, when that guy came up to you and you didn't really know him, and he was like, hey, can you heal my servant? And you were like, yes, he's healed. You didn't even go see the servant. Like, can we do one of those, Jesus? Can we just, like, sit in a circle and, like, you know, we'll just hold hands and we'll sing some worship songs, you know? Can we just do one of those and you just heal Lazarus from far away? I mean, I think that is the best plan, Jesus. I think that's the best way to do this. And Jesus shares a little lesson with them over the next few verses. And then he says this in verse 11. He says, after he had said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him. And his disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better. And so they're like, we don't have to go. This is fantastic. Like, his fever broke. Like, let him sleep, Jesus. Don't wake him up. Like, we don't want to do that. He's going to get better. In verse 13, Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Lazarus is dead. And then they're like, wait. He's dead? Yeah, he's dead. Why didn't we go? Like, what was that all about? And in verse 15, moving on, it says, and for your sake, I'm glad I was not there. Wait. For our sake? What about Lazarus' sake, Jesus? Like, he's dead, Jesus. What about for Mary and Martha, Jesus? And Jesus said, for your sake, I'm glad that he died. For your sake, I'm glad people saw it. I'm glad people doubted me. I'm glad for the mystery surrounding it. Like, where's Jesus? Is Jesus going to show up? Is he really the Son of God? Is he really going to do what he says? Does he really love you guys? I'm glad for all the Jews trying to prove Mary and Martha wrong. Like, I told you, Jesus, he's not going to show up. This is too big for him. It's too hard for him. And Jesus said that I'm glad for all of it because I have something so amazing, so huge that I want you to learn that I'm willing to allow the people that I love to experience some pain and suffering. That's how important this lesson is that I'm about to teach you. In verse 15, the next part, it says, so that. And he kind of pauses, and this so that part is really just saying, so that now I'm going to give you the reason. And then he gives us the reason. And he says, so that you may believe. So that you may believe. And the disciples are probably confused and they're thinking, wait. Jesus, you're telling me that in the grand scheme, my belief is greater than people going through pain and suffering? It's better that we would believe and allow people to go through pain and suffering? That's how important this lesson is. You would allow someone to die, Jesus? You'd allow his sisters to watch him die just so we can have bigger faith? I mean, are you serious? And Jesus would say, yeah. You set this whole thing up, Jesus, to teach us about faith. Yeah. Is it really worth that? Like, you put someone through all of this pain so that we could learn something? And Jesus said, yes. Yep. And some of us have said this before, haven't we? That I can't believe in a God who would allow all of this pain. Can I tell you something? If that's you, and that's fine, that's tough, and that's hard. But if you've said that, then you probably don't believe in the God of the Bible. Because Jesus set this up. He said that he set this up. That's how important it is to him that you have big faith. That he will do whatever it takes to make sure you have huge faith and believe in him. In verse 15, he says, but let us go to him. And so he decides, let us go to him. And Martha runs to Jesus when she sees him. And she says something kind of similar that maybe most of us or all of us have said at one point or another if we've walked through something challenging. She said, Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died. Jesus, this is your fault. Jesus, this is your fault. I've seen you heal everyone, Jesus. I've seen you heal that Roman, the Romans who we don't even like. Jesus, we don't even like the Romans, right? We're like slaves to the Romans. They're really, really mean to us. And you healed a Roman. And Jesus, we're your friends. And you weren't here. Jesus, this is your fault. And she goes on to say something absolutely fantastic in verse 22. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Man, what a statement. As broken and as angry as I am, Jesus, I still believe that even though I don't really understand everything, I still believe in you. I still believe that you're the Son of God. And Jesus says to her in verse 23, your brother will rise again. And Martha answered, I know he's going to rise again in the resurrection at the last day. It's like, thanks, Jesus, for that little pat on the back. Like, that's what everyone says at every funeral ever. Like, we'll see him in heaven again one day. And you'll get to get autographs from Moses and Noah, and it'll be fun. Thanks, Jesus, right? Thanks a lot. And Jesus said to her, and he goes, no, you don't get it. He said, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection. You're right that God would give me whatever I ask for, Martha, but it's bigger than that. You're right that I'm a teacher, and I'm a good teacher, and I'm a miracle worker, but can I tell you, it's bigger than that. You're looking at resurrection and life. And he says, the one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And then he asked her, here's this question. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? This whole thing is about getting these people to believe in him, to help their faith get to a point where it's not down here, but it's way up here when it comes to Jesus. And he was willing to go to great lengths to see that happen. And maybe you're not comfortable with that. Can I tell you something? I don't really think I'm comfortable with that either. But that's how important our faith is in him. I think that the number one way to honor God, is to trust him in the midst of pain. In the midst of you going through a season where things don't make sense and there's a whole bunch of unexpected pain, I think the number one way you can honor God is to go, God, I don't get this, I don't understand it, but I trust you. But I trust you in the midst of it. And this is what Martha said. Do you believe this? She said, yes, Lord. She replied, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. Lord, I believe, Lord, even though Lazarus is dead, I believe. And Jesus asked to be taken to the grave. And there's kind of an interesting moment. This is the shortest verse in the Bible, verse 35. It says, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. And he says, then the Jews said, see how he loved him. And there's kind of this clash of worlds, right? I mean, someone who is all God and all man, and he has this moment where he pauses and he goes, you know what? I want to experience this moment as a human. I want to experience what it's like, the pain, the suffering, and what's going on. And it's almost like he gets to say to us when we're walking through different seasons in our lives and we're crying, and he gets to say, hey, I just want you to know, I've been there. I've experienced that pain and that suffering. I've experienced that. It's like Jesus gets to say, I know what that feels like. And Jesus is standing in front of the tomb and he tells them, roll away the stone. And they're like, whoa, Jesus, just pause for a second, Jesus. He's been dead for like 4 days. Now, I don't know, Jesus, maybe you're not a doctor, I get that, but maybe you don't understand, like when people die, it's going to stink, Jesus. Okay, I'm just going to say it's going to stink. In the King James Version, no lie, it actually says this. It says, Lord, by this time he will have stinketh, right? Lord, like he stinketh. We don't want to rolleth that stoneth because it's going to stinketh, right? I mean, it's like, Lord Jesus, just you don't understand. And Jesus, he doesn't care. He says, roll it away, right? Roll it away. And then he kind of says an odd prayer. Jesus kind of says an odd prayer, and this isn't for Jesus. This isn't for anything. But listen to what he says. He says, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here so that they may believe that you sent me. Jesus, God, I just want you to know this prayer, it's not for me. I know Lazarus is going to wake up, and I know that you hear me, but I need all of these people watching to believe in me, and I need them to know that I'm your son, that I'm the son of God, the Messiah, the one who was talked about forever and ever and ever in their history books. I need them to get it and to understand. So I'm not really doing this to ask because I know that you're going to hear me, but I'm just doing this for them so that when they see this happen and they go, whoa, he is the son of God. He is who he says that he is. And he called Lazarus out of the grave. And he says, Lazarus, come forth. And he calls him out of the grave. And it says that Lazarus came out. What a moment, right? I mean, all of this pain and all of this suffering and all of this doubt, all of a sudden, in the midst of that, I will say that any doubt that people had instantly went away, right? Like, okay, I give up. That was ridiculous, right? Like, he is who he says. He's probably Jesus. It says in verse 45, it says, therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. That even the people that were on the outskirts going, no way, this isn't real, this can't happen. They went, okay, we believe in him. Jesus allowed this so that people would believe in him. Jesus didn't leverage a painful situation. He created one. Jesus didn't leverage a painful situation in this moment. He created one. He wanted to show the connection between pivotal circumstances and our faith growing. And he will leverage anything and everything in order to grow our faith. Now, this isn't every single time, right? He doesn't always create painful situations, but I can tell you, if you're walking through a painful situation, he will leverage that painful situation to grow your faith. And here's the truth, that same pivotal circumstance that can grow our faith, right? It can also diminish our faith, can't it? Can also, and I think it comes down to, as you're walking through a season, I think it comes down to the people that surround you. If you're walking through a tough season in your life or a pivotal circumstance, I think it's the people that surround you. If the people that are around you and closest to you are like, hey, I told you that God wouldn't come through. See, where's God in this situation now? Where's your God now? What are you going to do now? Do you think you have a plan now? What's going to happen now? But if you have people around you that go, hey, continue to trust God. Hey, God said he'll never leave you or forsake you. Hey, I don't know what this is about, but we can trust God through the midst of it. I think it depends on the people who are around you because pain, guys, pain is a part of the story. Pain is a part of every story, and you're either going to lean into God or away from God. If you lean into God, you're going to see your faith grow. I love what Philip Yancey, he's a Christian author, he said this, there's only one thing worse than disappointment with God, and it's disappointment without God. That you can be disappointed with God and still trust him, can't you? And you can question what God is doing and still trust